educators, students and educational developments. Dublin City FM.
Hello and welcome. This is Inside Education. My name is Sean Delaney. Today we look at the issue of bullying in our schools. What is it? What causes it? What are its effects? And most importantly, what can we do about it? My guest on the programme is Professor Mona O'Moore from Trinity College Dublin, who has been interested in this topic and studying it for over three decades. She first became interested in bullying in schools when she was doing research in Scotland about how students with physical disabilities were getting on when they attended mainstream schools. In our interview, she will define bullying as a form of repeated aggression. She will describe characteristics of bullies and victims that help bullying behaviour to exist. She will tell us that 4 out of 10 children in Irish primary schools are involved in bullying, and nearly 3 in 10 children in post-primary schools. She will explain how a whole school approach to bullying can help reduce bullying in a school. But I began our interview by asking Professor Mona O'Moore what bullying is.
Well, bullying is a form of aggression, but what makes it different from just aggression per se is that it is repeated aggression, and it can be verbal, physical and psychological. So a child who is bullied is a child who is then singled out and essentially then picked on almost very persistently and systematically almost, so that they feel that they are made to be different. And it's very difficult for them, perhaps, then to shake the perpetrators virtually off their back, so to speak, because, again, they sort of know that they are in this position where they are being singled out. So it creates this insecurity for them in so much that they never know exactly when it's going to happen or how it's going to happen or where it's going to happen, but all they know is that essentially they are made to feel different by being singled out. And it's this sense of, you know, what is it about me that in a sense invites these attacks? Why am I this special person and not perhaps everyone else in the classroom? So essentially, I suppose there is no really universal accepted definition of bullying, but what tends to be agreed is that it is repeated and it is willful, and there's an abuse of power. So generally, one's not talking about, two children of the same height or weight almost, or perhaps age, but it could be somebody then who's abusing their power by being perhaps much older, by being much stronger. But equally, of course, it can be a numbers game. And a child may have absolutely no chance, for example, if it is then simply outnumbered. And there again, you see then an element of an abuse of power. But what is critical is really that it is repeated. It's not a once-off, but yet I sort of feel that a once-off should be taken seriously too, because again, it's the precursor of bullying. Bullying is a process. And if a child gets away with picking on somebody once or twice or three times, then it can so easily lead to bullying. And that's why, in a sense, we should be seriously noting those children who are engaging in, you know, what they might call once-off aggressive behaviors, because I believe it's a precursor for perhaps bullying. And again, might I just say that a once-off attack can in fact be so intimidating and so threatening that it amounts to almost an ongoing form
of, because there's fear there afterwards.
Exactly, that's right. So all that needs to be is for that one person who has in a sense issued that deadly threat to be about them, and it means then that you're almost in a sense in a sort of a potential victim status. So that's why certainly in my own definition, I would actually take that into account when we define bullying.
There's a girl who sits under the bleachers, just another day eating alone. And though she smiles, there is something she's hiding. and she can't find a way to relate. But she just goes unnoticed as the crowd passes by. And she'll pretend to be busy when inside she just wants to cry.
So what are the factors that cause someone to be bullied?
Well, of course, there can be many, and, you know, we generally think of bullying as sort of multifaceted. So, of course, there's an interaction between, the attributes of the bully and the attributes of the victim. I have to preface that I really don't like sort of referring to children as bullies, because I always believe they can change their behavior. But for, you know, convenience of now talking, one can refer to the bully. So essentially a child who has the propensity, for example, to bully and who tends to bully will be, of course, a child and, in my view, is somebody with very unmet needs. So in other words, they are unhappy in some ways. They have feelings of inadequacy. They need to almost empower themselves by belittling and humiliating another child. So their needs may be then to gain power. Their needs may be for attention-seeking behavior, for example, to gain status. Normally there is some payoff. And that is why they engage in this behavior. But the motivation would often then be coming from perhaps feelings of inadequacy. Motivation is a huge motive, as I think every adult can understand. And so it's almost like having to pull somebody down off their pedestal, so to speak. Of course, they may also go for somebody then who are much weaker than themselves, maybe who have learning difficulties or whatever, because they may then feel that they can sort of show off that they are that much better. So it's either kind of, in a sense, I suppose, humiliating somebody to empower themselves, or it is really dragging somebody down off their pedestal, because again, it's reflecting and saying much more about the bully than it does about the victim.
Are there some characteristics in the victim then that also makes them more likely to be a victim of bullying?
Well, I think first of all, we should emphasize that anyone can be a victim, and it often just takes to being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Having said that, of course, there are children who are going to be more at risk, because I suppose everybody at some stage in life is going to be targeted, because a bully will always test out a person to see whether or not they can retaliate, because no bully really wants to be left on the losing side of any attack. And therefore, they are actually going to be quite smart about testing somebody out. So most people will actually be tested and targeted, so to speak. Those who are obviously not able to shake them off for one reason or the other are then the ones who are likely to be further victimized. And so, yes, the children then who are most at risk would be children, for example, who are sort of have a more passive, quiet, unassertive personality. We may talk about somebody kind of being different, but again, it's not necessarily the difference that, you know, it may attract the bully in the first place, but it's going to be the personality that and the way of behaving that determines whether or not they're going to be victimized. And then we're back to my earlier study, for example, in Scotland, where a child who's then got a very visible physical handicap may be targeted, but they are not, in a sense, being victimized because their personality is such that they can sort of shake them off. So the anxious children, the ones with the passive personality, the unassertive ones, the insecure children are then the ones who are likely to be the ones who go forward and unfortunately gain what one might call a sort of a victim status.
The beginning of the first week's crash, did everything I tried to fit in, but the others, they couldn't seem to get past all the things that mismatched on the surface. And she
on 103.2. This is Dublin City FM.
And how widespread is bullying in Irish schools?
From our own research, and bearing in mind that we conducted a nationwide study after the first set of guidelines were issued by the Department of Education Science, which was in 1993, so that nationwide study, which was then very representative of Ireland because it went into all the counties, then showed that, maybe what might be surprising for a lot of people, but it was roughly around 42% of primary school children actually admitted to being involved in bullying. Now, that implies that they were either a victim or a bully victim. But it was then showing that, 40% of children were involved one way or the other. And then at second level schools, post-primary schools, for example, it was then reduced to, say, about 26%. And so it shows that at primary level, we actually have a higher percentage than we have at post-primary. Now, if we look to sort of very serious frequent bullying, say once a day or more often, then, for example, we found that 1 in 20 children at post-primary would be subjected to what we would regard then as very frequent and serious bullying, and at post-primary, 1 in 50. Now you may know that Ireland has got the benefit of this longitudinal study, which is funded by the Office for the Minister of Children.
This is Growing Up in Ireland.
It's Growing Up in Ireland, exactly. And it has just released the results for the 9-year-olds. And there it has been indicated then in the study that we have 40% of 9-year-olds have reported that they have been bullied.
So it's a very consistent figure.
So it's a very consistent figure, yes, for primary schools anyway. We don't have the equivalent for post-primary other than perhaps a smaller study, which again does reflect that it's, in fact, it's increased a little bit at post-primary, might I say, and maybe that relates to the fact that children are perhaps feeling it's less stigmatizing in being able to report it, or maybe it's also reflecting that we're not really doing enough to curb it.
And do some schools have a bigger problem with bullying than other schools?
Oh, I think so. There's no doubt that some schools make a huge effort to try and prevent and to deal with it. And naturally, the efforts that you put in is going to reap the rewards. So yes, there's actually quite wide differences between schools, depending on whether or not they make the effort, as I say, to prevent it, or whether they tend to just leave well alone. It's another day at school and he's just walking out the door. Got his rucksack on his back and his feet dragging on the floor. Always late but when he's questioned he can't think of what to say. Has the bruises from the teachers hoping that they go away.
What can schools do to prevent or to at least reduce bullying?
The best approach, which gives you the best results, is to actually introduce a whole school approach to bullying. It's actually, you can even expand it and talk about a whole school community approach. Now, essentially then, that involves taking in all the partners in education relating to that school community, building a really solid policy, which I suppose will state very clearly that they do not accept bullying. And then, of course, they would make huge effort then to create an ethos where essentially there is no acceptance to bullying. Beyond the policy, of course, then one has to have procedures in place. So the procedures for any school then would be that every, as I say, partner within that community knows exactly for example, how to report it, and knows exactly how it will be investigated, and knows that there will be efforts to resolve it, and then the report and the results will be reported back to the relevant sort of individuals. So it is really critical that the entire school community knows that there's going to be a zero acceptance to bullying, and then that there are procedures in place that will actually deal with it beyond, of course, doing everything to prevent it. And if a school is really trying to prevent it, again, it means then that there has to be huge awareness raising campaign for the pupils, but first of all that teachers then again, I suppose, have to feel comfortable with perhaps the ways in which one can resolve bullying problems. I think when one feels comfortable in dealing with it, then one can deal with it. And the pupils, I think, have to see teachers dealing with it more, because again, our own results would indicate that the youngsters feel that perhaps the teachers don't care because they're perceived as not actually intervening. So I think part of the curriculum and part of the challenge is to actually have not only the pupils intervene and say stop, but also that they see the teachers taking it seriously, intervening and saying stop. And then, of course, one needs to look at the actual approaches that one is going to use to deal with it, to try and move away from perhaps what would be the punitive approaches to one that is perhaps more understanding and more restoring of perhaps responsible behavior. So any child who is, in a sense, come to light for behaving as a bully would be taken aside and again given the opportunity to take responsibility for that behavior by making good. So an element we're talking about, restorative approaches. This makes it much easier for the victim and for other children to come forward, because at the moment what we have is this extraordinary reluctance to tell that they're being victimized.
Because it might get worse.
Because it might get worse. And there's, you know, acts of retaliation and revenge and so on and so forth. So it's perfectly understandable why children are so reluctant to tell. And of course, the culture also embeds that sort of taboo of telling. So I think if youngsters see that there isn't this huge punishment at the end of what can be behavior that they're not even that very aware of the hurt that they're creating, it will allow then youngsters to come forward and I think take on that responsibility of telling. And I think we have to work with the peer group to reduce the bystander apathy. You know, something like over 86% of children in schools are actually bystanders to bullying. So, you know, it is an extraordinary percentage of youngsters who actually know that it's going on, do nothing. And those who do something actually are children then who have a good sense of their own self-worth, they have good self-esteem. And that's interesting. So that shows again what we should be doing within the education system is to build children, you know, to develop that self-esteem, sense of their own worth, so that they know who they are and who they are standing, you know, that they can stand up really for their own values.
Even though with mom and dad they both got problems of their own, caught in that catch 22, but he'd still rather be at home. Cries himself to sleep and plays when he wakes up, things might have changed, but everything's still the same. But didn't you say you always said that I should speak up? But it seems like all the things you said to me before meant nothing at all.
How can a parent know if their son or daughter is being bullied in school?
The best way of a parent having a sense that their child is being bullied is seeing their mood, for example. A child, they know there's a parent is probably the person who knows their child the best. They know how they are coming in from school, they know how they are going to school. And yet when they see that there's a change in mood, where the child is perhaps becoming more withdrawn, becoming even perhaps tearful, is not able to almost take any kind of conflict at all, and indeed might in fact turn aggressive, angry. So there's that change in mood, and then of course you have they may have suspicions, for example, that clothes is beginning to be missing, or items, their own personal items may be gone, and completely improbable excuses being given. When parents even try to sort of say, look, is there anything going on? And there's a blanket refusal to say nothing, and yet you have this change of behavior. So I think, and then of course you might also get the reluctance to going to school, maybe you've got the headaches on the Monday morning, the tummy aches on the Monday morning, and so on, and every possible excuse not to go to school, but yet again refusing to say what's wrong. So I suppose the most critical one would be the refusal to say what's wrong, and yet that there is a change in mood and behavior which goes towards being either very withdrawn or getting very angry, and perhaps displacing a lot of the emotions maybe onto younger siblings, or and then again, as I say, perhaps getting very tearful, you know, if challenged. So anxiety, insecurity, mood swings, and indeed then depression, of course, should be ringing, you know, very big bells for parents. I keep telling you that Johnny's hitting me, that's why I'm late for school. But you never listen. Instead, you always seem to end up blaming me for things that didn't do. For what it's worth, I didn't even want to tell you anything in case it made things worse. Just so you know. Every time I say that Johnny's hidden, hey mom and dad, it hurts.
And what can parents do if they find that their child is being bullied?
There's no good sort of trying to sit down with the child and start interrogating them, for example, because they will sense then that here is something the child does not wish to talk about. They can start working much more gently around the situation. They could sort of say, for example, do you know, I seem to recognize myself in you. Remember, when I was at school, around your age, I felt as miserable as you do or seem to be. And the reason I felt really miserable, because suddenly I was being got at, you know, and they could either start going, you know, talking about their own situation this way, so that the child, in a sense, then doesn't feel that they are the only one. And also then to be able to say, you know, how common the problem is. And often the best way is really for an adult to know about it, because then they can help, and so on. You can actually quite draw out a child like that, and you'd be amazed. Other than that, I would be inclined to get in touch with the teacher and reflect my concerns to the teacher. And I think this is why it's so critical to have a lovely parent-teacher relationship. And perhaps just ask the teacher, might they cast their eye over the situation. Maybe they've seen nothing and this can happen at all, but it will open the eyes for the teacher, give the teacher the opportunity to perhaps scout around and do something. And if, of course, there are peer support measures within the school, the teacher can delegate, for example, to, say, the peer supporters, or, you know, if there's a circle of friends or something, to see whether they can spot anything. And that will give that information then back to not only the teacher, who can then intervene if there is something going on, but also the parent. And that can start the whole process of resolving the issue. But I think every parent should kind of probably take it seriously when they sort of feel that they have this change in mood, and really start nipping it in the bud, as the sooner rather than later, because it'd be much easier to resolve at an early stage.
And is there a typical location where somebody is more likely to experience bullying?
Well, within the school, of course, it'll be in every nook and cranny that isn't virtually overseen by a teacher. So the architecture of a school actually can be actually quite critical. So I think now in when we're building sort of bully-free schools, so to speak, then, of course, one will be looking to the architecture of the school. Toilets, for example, are a classic place for children to be, might I say, brutally bullied. And humiliated, because there, of course, there tends not to be any teacher supervision. Bicycle sheds, areas in the playground, even in and around sports fields, and even perhaps on the sports field. So, yes, I think predominantly where there is not adult supervision, it can happen right under teachers' noses, of course, as well, because we have gesture bullying as a form of bullying. And teacher could be at blackboard attending to some other person, and yet here is somebody gesturing to a child exactly what they intend to do, you know, which is that they're dead the minute they're outside the school door and so on. And, of course, now we have cyberbullying, which makes it, of course, very difficult as well, because again there are no boundaries now and there's no safe haven for a victim at all, and they can get a very threatening message at home which relates to what may be done to them at school. So it's almost like an added curse almost for victims to actually have that sort of cyber bullying that they're exposed to.
And there's very little can be done to counteract that, is
To counter cyberbullying, I suppose, again, we're down to education and we're down to values here. I think there's only so much that can be done by sort of monitoring, you know, phones and internet and so on and so forth, because at the end of the day, children will find ways around it. I think, yes, parents of very young children can use now some of the new software to block, you know, undesirable phone numbers, etc. But at the end of the day, for, say, the older children, it is really going to be down to education, that one can get across the message that it is wrong to bully. And the most cowardly way to bully is actually by cyberbullying. And it's just to really put the onus on the youngsters to realize, really, that it is quite pathetic to be the bully, because it reflects that they are carrying all the sort of the psychological and emotional baggage which they are really just trying to project onto others in order to make themselves feel good. But they need adult assistance, I think, in order to help them to, I think, get rid of that emotional baggage and get onto a path where they can reach their potential by very sort of constructive means.
And Professor Mona O'Moore is the founder and coordinator of the Anti-Bullying Centre in Trinity College. The centre has resources which can be borrowed, and it also offers related services to schools. Their website is www.abc.tcd.ie, and the contact number is Dublin 869-3488. That's all we have time for on this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on www.insideed.com or by searching on iTunes. You can contact the programme with comments or suggestions to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. That is insideeducation, all one word, at dublincityfm.ie. I want to thank Professor Mona O'Moore from Trinity College Dublin, who was our guest on today's programme. The music you heard was Mist Invisible by Marie Digby and Johnny by Craig David. Till the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.